case number
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'm Harry Cole, counsel for the appellant Blakeney Communications, Inc. here. I've advised the timekeeper that I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal. There are 2 points I'd like to address this morning, Your Honors. First is the FCC's failure to satisfy the standard articulated by this Court in the 2008 network IP decision. And second, I'd like, if time permits, to speak briefly to the particular significance of the fact that the waiver below directly harmed and prejudiced Blakeney Communications. Our focus this morning is the FCC's waiver of a well-established filing deadline. And when filing deadlines are at issue, I think the court's decision in network IP is the first order of business to look at. And the question is whether the waiver below met the standards of the network IP test, and the answer is no, it did not. The deadline in question required Clear Channel, which is the intervener in this case, to submit by June 13, 2005, an application for a license to cover a construction permit, which it had been sitting on for 3 years. Failure to meet that deadline meant that Clear Channel's construction permit would be automatically canceled. That in turn meant that Clear Channel's station would be automatically reclassified to a Class C0 status pursuant to the FCC's reclassification procedure, which we describe in our brief in some detail. The deadline and the consequences of missing the deadline, that is, automatic cancellation of the permit, are no big secret. They've been codified in the FCC's rules since 1998, and more importantly, they're set forth in detail expressly and explicitly on the face of the Clear Channel construction permit. So Clear Channel clearly knew what was at risk if it did not construct the station and file its license application.
But it did construct the station on time.
It built the facility, yes, Your Honor.
Right. So if we look at the rationale for it, why doesn't the FCC's de minimis rationale work? In other words, the construction was completed. They missed the deadline by 2 or 3 days.
The FCC, we have doubts as to whether or not they in fact constructed, but we can't prove they didn't, and therefore, at this point, I think we have to concede that the facility was built. But the problem is that the FCC, when it establishes a deadline, it has to abide by that deadline. Rules are rules, what the court said in Reuters. And if the FCC wants to establish a de minimis exception to that rule, it has to justify it under the network IP standard. In fairness to all parties, including those such as Blakeney, which was standing by this whole process started because Blakeney filed an application pursuant to the reclassification procedure in 2001. That process meant that because the Blakeney application required the downgrading of the Clear Channel application, when Blakeney's application was filed, Clear Channel was notified and given an opportunity under the procedure to file for its own upgrade and basically block Blakeney out.
Well, the Commission argues that this case is different than network IP because, as Judge Henderson was noting, the project was completed. The Commission found it was completed within the 3-year period, and there was a staff practice that didn't exist at the time of or wasn't referred to in networks IP.
Well, the Commission says there's a staff practice, Your Honor, but does not establish that there was one. And in fact, I doubt seriously there was one, as we indicated in our brief. There's no evidence of a staff practice. The Commission cites no previous rulings, no previous decisions, no previous policy statements, which evidence any kind of staff practice whatsoever. And in network IP, Your Honor, that involved complaints about certain carrier compensation requirements not involving broadcasting. But there, the supposed late filing party had in fact filed timely and served everybody on the face of the planet so that everybody knew the complaint was there, but apparently counsel had messed up on the filing fee, as a result of which the initial filing in network IP was returned, and it was ultimately filed a couple of days later, a couple of weeks later, with the correct filing fee. So in terms of prejudice to other parties or, you know, de minimis problems, certainly the problem in network IP was no less de minimis than was the case here. Because here, Blakeney Communications had been sitting on the sidelines for 4 years at that point, waiting for its opportunity, which the commission had clearly articulated in the reclassification procedure. Guys in Blakeney's situation could sit by the wayside and see what would happen, with the understanding that if construction was not completed as authorized by the deadline, then the door would open for Blakeney to file, and that's what they did.
You said is your position that it wasn't constructed as authorized based on the fact that they didn't file?
Yes, Your Honor, because on the face of the construction permit, one of the terms of the construction permit on its face is you have to comply with not only building it, but also filing your covering license application by the expiration date, and the failure to do so will result in the automatic cancellation of the permit. And that is on the face of the permit, Your Honor. The commission puts that there. Yes, Your Honor.
You said that if the agency had a de minimis exception to its deadline, it would have to make that clear in some way. I assume that they could do that, as they've done it here, by, you know, making that decision and publishing a decision that says we have this de minimis exception.
But I think also, Your Honor, if they were to do that, that statement would have to be accompanied by showing that it complies with the network IP test. That is, that would constitute a kind of an anticipatory waiver going forward, that, okay, we have this rule, but we're only going to apply this rule going forward for, we're going to give everybody a two-day window or a 10-day window or whatever. Right now, we have no idea what that window is. And we know, for example, that the commission has, since our case, the commission has waived it in the event of a two-week delay, in the event of a six-week delay, but not in the event of a four-year delay. So, you know, we don't know exactly where the line is, and the commission hasn't explained where that line is. And in our view, the line is the day that the construction permit expires is the deadline. And importantly, if you look at it, assuming the network IP, if I may return to the network IP test, the second element of this network IP test is especially striking here. That's the element that requires the commission demonstrate or articulate what the special circumstances were that might warrant some lenience, some leeway as far as the deadline is concerned. The court has described that as requiring unusual or compelling circumstances, catastrophes, cataclysms, that kind of thing, calamities, earthquakes, floods, fire, famine, doom, defeat, despair, that kind of stuff. None of that is apparent here. Nothing happened here. What happened was the Clear Channel procrastinated, which is exactly what the network IP court said is not an acceptable basis.
So let me just be clear. Do you read network IP to preclude the commission from adopting a de minimis standard?
No, Your Honor.
I thought your answer was it does not preclude the commission so long as it's a going forward. It can be applied in this case.
Yes.
Is that your answer?
That's correct, Your Honor. And I think that they would have a very difficult time to explain why a de minimis standard would apply, would justify a waiver in light of the network IP decision.
Because of this language you just read.
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
So the answer would be it cannot have the type of de minimis standard that it articulated here, even in the future.
I think it would be very difficult. I can't say that I would foreclose that absolutely, but I think I agree with you it would be very difficult to do. And if I might also point out that if you read the commission's decision, the commission does not articulate an express de minimis standard. It refers at a couple of points during the decision to only 2 days, and then in the next to last paragraph, it refers in passing to the de minimis nature. So it is not a square discussion that says we've looked at this and we've considered the we've considered the impact of the rule, we've considered the purpose of the rule, and we've concluded that 2 days is okay. There's no express discussion at all along those lines in the commission's decision.
So had the commission found that there was a calamity or something like that, that would in or some other language that it would take from network IP, that would be sufficient.
For the second part of network IP, yeah. Yes. And they would still have to demonstrate under the first part that waiver better serves the public interest than would adherence to the underlying definition.
Well, I thought arguably the commission's statement about why it was granting this waiver, and I know there's some dispute about this, but more people are going to be served. The construction has been accomplished at some cost to Clear Channel. Now, you point out it didn't refer to the prejudice to your client.
It did not, Your Honor.
Yeah.
And Your Honor, if I might address the cost, that aspect.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is that, as I understand the record, the cost to Clear Channel is approximately $40,000, which is not a pittance, but it's still not a huge amount of money. And that amount of money is still usable. That is, Clear Channel can still use the facilities that it purchased with a Class C zero station just as well as it could with a Class C station. So the money has not been dumped down a rat hole by any means. Secondly, the amount of service that would, the increase in service that would result doesn't take into account the amount of service that would result from the improvement of the Blatney communications service. And also, you know, that is, it's hard for me to understand the notion of some spent money which was spent of their own volition. They did it at their own risk. They knew what the deadline for the construction permit was. They knew what the rules were. And they failed, you know, they spent the money but then failed to meet the terms of the construction permit. Given that, that is not an unusual or compelling circumstance in the nature of an earthquake or a flood. It's a.
Can I just ask a practical question?
Certainly.
Because this happened in 2005. There was a decision in 2008. It's now 2012. What's happening in the meantime? Is Clear Channel operating?
My understanding is Clear Channel has been operating with Class C, its improved Class C facilities, yes.
Okay. And so if we roll this back, would they have to diminish themselves to a...
As I understand, C0, yes. And they would have to go back to a C0, which would just mean that someone would go into the transmitter room and turn the dial down from, I believe it's... And I don't quote me on this because I'm not an engineer, but I believe it would be from their originally authorized 77 kilowatts to 59 kilowatts. They would still have a substantially improved service area from what they had in 2001 when Blatney first started the whole process. And yes, in terms of the passage of time, Blatney is now into its second decade of waiting. Your Honor, I noticed that I'm well beyond my time.
Let me ask you, Mr. Cole, about what the commission itself put in its order as far as similar waivers, and I think these are the same things you mentioned, the station WJUN, Mexico, Pennsylvania, so forth, comparing, and the commission put it into the order, comparing what looks like several days, sometimes 6 weeks, as you mentioned. Why isn't that enough of a waiver policy? In other words, they may do it on an ad hoc basis, and that may not be sufficient, but they have in the past done exactly what they did with Clear Channel with more than the 2 day missing the deadline.
Fair question, Your Honor, and let me address that in two ways. First, there's two sets of supposed waivers that have been referenced in the record. The two that I talked about, that is the 2 week and the 6 week and the 2 week and the 6 week, which were granted, and the 4 year, which was not granted, all occurred after our case. They all occurred after 2009, I believe it was. And so those,
the ones
before, there is no, as far as we could track down, there's no record of exactly what happened. What you do is you go to the FCC's database and you look for those applications and you see a file number for the construction permit application, which has a date which shows where the construction permit application was filed. You can then find the construction permit. That gives you an expiration date. And then you go back to the database and you look for the license application, and you see that that license application was filed after the expiration of the construction permit. And then the license application was granted. That those are the factoids that you know from the FCC's. We have no idea why those were granted. We have no idea whether there are other circumstances. Now, in some instances, a construction permit can be extended through what is referred to as the tolling process. If a construction permittee runs into problems litigation-wise, and which prevent it from building during the 3 years, it can come to the commission and say, we haven't been able to build for X, Y, and Z reasons. It's a fairly limited universe of reasons, but there's a tolling process. That's not at issue here. That might have been at work in those. We don't know. The commission might have overlooked. You know, it's entirely possible that nobody bothered to check to see whether the permit had already expired before they granted the license application. And most importantly, in none of those cases is there any indication that there were third parties that were jeopardized, as Blakeney is here. That is, if you're going to waive a rule, it's all well and good to waive a rule if nobody else is going to get harmed. But as soon as an innocent third party comes along and is going to be harmed, I think that is a significantly important factor to take into account. There's no indication at all in the very sketchy skeletal records that are available on those three that are mentioned prior to our case that anything like that was at issue.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Smith?
May it please the court. Good cause was shown for waiving non-pro-tunk the automatic forfeiture provision of the commission's rules. If that provision had been strictly applied in this case, that would have caused Clear Channel to restart the licensing process by filing another application for a construction permit, which would have specified the Class C facilities that Clear Channel had already constructed. And if the automatic forfeiture provision had not been waived, then the construction permit would have canceled, it would have expired, and that would have deprived Clear Channel of the authority to operate its then constructed station. Its existing license did not specify the upgraded facilities. It only authorized Clear Channel to operate the station with the under-facilitated equipment.
But when the commission promulgates a rule about automatic forfeiture without any further action by the commission, doesn't that put everybody on notice that this is exactly what may happen if you don't comply with the construction permit?
Yes, and the commission adopted that the automatic forfeiture provision to relieve administrative burden of canceling
and
permits.
And the burden to the permit holder that you have to complete within 3 years and you have to file your application for the covering license within that same period.
Well, the burden, it didn't shift the burden to the permittee. It relieved the administrative burden on the commission of having to cancel expired permits. Here, the filing of the license application during the construction period, it keeps the construction permit live,
right, but here,
after
that
construction
happen.
Is completed.
That didn't happen here.
Correct, and that's why the commission waived the automatic forfeiture provision. By doing that, it prevented the construction permit from expiring without also extending the period of completing construction within 3 years. And that's why there were special circumstances here, because there was no extension of the actual three-year construction period, because construction had been completed. And so under the special circumstances of timely completing construction, and then you file the covering license application, there's a short delay, then the commission has determined that good cause exists for waiving the automatic forfeiture provision. The commission did not waive the requirement of timely filing of the license application during the construction period. The commission admonished Clear Channel for its late filing, but by waiving the automatic forfeiture provision, that kept the construction permit from expiring, which in turn provided authority to Clear Channel to operate its newly constructed facility while the commission acted on an application for a license. Otherwise, it could not have operated the constructed facility, because it didn't have any authority to do that once the construction permit expired and before the commission granted a license.
Do you think network IP applies in these circumstances, this court's case?
It applies to the extent that the commission is obligated to show good cause for waiving its rules in special circumstances. And here, those special circumstances were timely completion of construction and a short delay. The waiver of the forfeiture provision was not based on Clear Channel's mistake. I think the waiver in network IP, the good cause was based on the mistake that was made by the applicant. Here, the commission didn't say that we find good cause because Clear Channel misread our rule and thought that it had more time than our rules allow to file its application. And the commission did not waive the actual filing deadline. What the commission waived here was the automatic forfeiture of the construction permit because the filing was untimely.
When you said that if the FCC hadn't waived the automatic forfeiture, Clear Channel would have had to start all over again, in essence. But with Blakeney pending application, why wouldn't the automatic, if you hadn't waived the automatic forfeiture, wouldn't Blakeney automatically, I hate to use that word anyway, its application would then control or would then be acted on?
No, Blakeney's application could not proceed.
Okay, why?
Because Clear Channel still maintained a license for a Class C station. And so Clear Channel's, the problem is that Clear Channel had a valid license to operate a Class C station with less than full class facilities. It had a construction permit to upgrade the Class C station to full Class C facilities. If the construction permit had been had expired, then Clear Channel still retained a license to operate as a Class C facility, but now its license would not match the upgraded station. So its authority to operate that station, it wasn't consistent with the equipment. It required its antenna to be at a lower height and a reduction of power. And that's where there's a problem if the construction permit expires on Clear Channel side. But because Clear Channel continues to have a Class C license, Blakeney's intervening application could not proceed because Blakeney's proposed facilities were not properly spaced from Clear Channel's Class C station.
As constructed or as initially? As built out or as initially?
Well, as built out, but also are the commission's rules protect stations as if they're using full Class C facilities. So Blakeney would have to protect Clear Channel as a full Class C station, even if it's authorized to operate with less than full Class C facilities. And so Blakeney's proposed facilities can only proceed if Clear Channel was its license, its authority was reclassified as Class C zero, and that didn't happen here. And so if the construction permit had expired, we basically would have been in the same place we were in 2002 with Clear Channel holding a license as a Class C station that's authorized to operate with less than full Class C facilities.
Do we know from the record about these cases that you noted, the FCC noted in the order that in which there was a waiver? Do we know from the record whether it was a waiver of the automatic forfeiture and not the license application, or both? Or what I'm trying to get at is, it sounds like in this case you split the baby with respect to the automatic forfeiture, waiving that but not waiving the license. And I'm asking, do we know from the record whether did that before in these other cases?
At the time the commission addressed this issue of the automatic forfeiture, what Clear Channel had brought to the commission's attention is that when you go through the database, the late filed applications were still processed. When an application is filed, there's an indication that construction has been completed and that the late filing of the application did not prevent grant. And it wasn't the case where the commission made an active, or the staff made an active decision. Those applications were nonetheless processed, even though they were filed after the construction permit expired. Unless the court has any questions.
All right.
Thank you.
Does Mr. Cole have any time left? All right, why don't you take 2 minutes?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Appreciate the opportunity. Judge Henderson, you had it exactly right. Blakeney's application was filed. Blakeney's application was pending. If the Clear Channel application goes away, as it should have, Blakeney gets processed through no problem at all, and that's all there is to that.
How about if the automatic forfeiture is waived but not the license? That's what opposing counsel's point was.
I understand that, but that is contrary to the notion of the whole reclassification procedure that got this thing started in the first place. The idea of the reclassification procedure is that somebody in Blakeney's position who could improve his facilities but for a full Class C, which is not operating with full Class C potential, can force the full Class C to choose. Either, you know, fish or cut bait. You're either going to go up in power, in which case Blakeney stays where he is, or you're not, in which case Blakeney can improve. And in adopting that procedure, the commission understood that there was going to be some incentive on the part of the full Class C to kind of keep the Blakeneys of the world off for a long time and kind of delay things. And so the commission said, look, here's the deal. We will let you have, you can cut in line. As soon as Blakeney walks in the door, you can cut in line ahead of him and you can get yourself a permit. But we will expect you to build that thing and get it up and running and operating and comply with all the rules within the time frame. And if you don't, it will automatically cancel and you will automatically be reclassified down to C0. And that's, you know, since Blatney had come.
They went halfway, but not the whole way.
Well, I understand that, but now, so what you're asking about is the waiver, whether or not the staff waived the the commission waived the reclassification process. That is the downgrading. That is codified in section 73-3573, note 4. The interesting aspect of that is that there are three commission decisions. There's two Media Bureau decisions, and then there's the full commission decision. Media Bureau decision number one doesn't acknowledge that at all. Doesn't say there's anything about 73-3573 at all. We called that to their attention and said, what about that? The Bureau on the second says, oops, we waived that by implication without explaining why they would waive that by implication, but it was waived by implication. When I got up to the full commission, the commission says, we don't need to waive that. and that's where the record stands as far as the reclassification aspect.
Okay.
And secondly, with respect to the downgrading, the notion that Clear Channel would not have a license to cover its operating facilities, the commission obviously contemplates with an automatic downgrading process that it would, the commission would then issue whatever authorizations would be necessary to authorize Clear Channel to continue to operate as a Class C0 station. And as I said before, the modifications that would be necessary would be largely just a tweak of the volume knob on the transmitter, and that would be that. So it would not be a difficult or expensive undertaking for them.
So under that scenario, the spacing requirement would not automatically block your client?
No. In fact, to the contrary, if Clear Channel were downgraded as contemplated by the reclassification procedure, that's precisely the way that the procedure is supposed to work. At that point, the way is clear, and that's why Blakeney filed on the day that Clear Channel missed its opportunity, because we figured, we can win now.
Okay.
Thank you. If there are no further questions, thank you, Your Honor.